Hey, welcome to the Crossroads Anywhere podcast. I'm Brian Tome, founding and senior pastor of Crossroads. You know, we started this church for our friends years and years ago who'd given up on church, but not necessarily on God. So whatever you believe, no matter where you are spiritually, you are in the right place to explore. So join us every week for new episodes. Well, this week we're starting a new series, Thrive. You know, we all want a better life, right? But the grind of the day-to-day soccer practice, business trips, family drama, status reports, yada, 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 starts to wear us down. But you know, God gives us a different path. He said that thriving in life is built on very clear principles, principles that are often out of vogue. So today, we're going to hear about how to be humble and celebrate.
Well, hello, hello, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to the first week of our new series called How to Thrive. And over the next 3 weeks, we are going to be looking at what does it mean to live a thriving life, a life that is fulfilled, a life that is rich, a life that is filled with things that bring us joy and a sense of satisfaction and like our lives matter. And we're actually going to be looking at concrete principles we see in the Bible for how to live that kind of life. I'm Chuck Mingo. I'm the campus pastor of Crossroads Oakley, if we've never met. And before we go any further, let me pray. God, thank you. Thank you that you have created a world and you've created opportunities within that world for us to thrive. So I pray that over the next 3 weeks, starting today, you would just begin to lay out for us an invitation to learn, an invitation to practice, an invitation to apply these principles that lead to a life that is thriving, a life that I believe is the one you always intended us to live. So I pray that for every person listening and all the places that they're listening, that we would receive in this moment. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Well, if you're new to Crossroads, one of the things we try really hard not to do is make assumptions. So we don't make assumptions about what you believe. We don't make assumptions about what you know. We don't make assumptions that everybody here believes the same things about Jesus, for instance. We don't make assumptions that everybody here believes the same things about the Bible. We try really hard to not make assumptions. And so no matter what you believe, no matter what your thoughts are, I want you to know you are welcomed here. But today, I'm actually going to deviate from that, and I'm going to make an assumption about you. I'm going to make an assumption about all of us who are here today, and it's this. Everyone here wants a life that's thriving. Everyone wants a thriving life. No one wants to just survive. We all want to thrive. I don't think you'd be here if you didn't think that there was something here that could help your life be better. I don't think you'd spend time engaging in whatever places that you're engaging around this stuff if you didn't think that this was a place where maybe you could learn some things about how to live a thriving life, because we all want to thrive. I don't think anybody who's listening here came in and said, you know what I really hope? I'm looking for some more conflict in my relationships. I don't think anybody says that. I don't think any of us are like, you know what would really make my week? Like a major career roadblock. That's what would make my week. None of us are thinking about that. We all want to thrive. No one is trying to live unhealthy. No one is trying to blow up their budget. We all want to live a thriving life. But here's the problem. There's a million voices in culture telling us how to find a thriving life. And so one of the premises in this series is this. God wants you to live a thriving life, and he actually designed you for it. Now that may come as of a surprise to some of us to think that way, but not only do we not want to survive, we want to thrive. I believe you're not meant to just survive, that you were actually created to thrive. And I believe that because of what God says to human beings in the very first book of the Bible, in Genesis 1, when he creates us. Let's read that together. God says this. He says, he blesses them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And then it says, God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. What does God do here? His first words to humanity is a blessing. And what is that blessing? Be fruitful Be fruitful. And yes, that certainly means be fruitful. Have babies, right? Multiply the people on the earth. But God intended your life to flourish in every way, for your work to be fruitful, for your relationships to be fruitful, for friendship to be fruitful, for creativity to be fruitful. He created you and he created me to thrive. We're actually designed for it. But we have a problem. Because obviously, when we look around the world, we don't have to look very far to see that there are places where this world, where people in this world are not thriving, where things are difficult and not as they should be. And the reason is because very early in the story of humanity, we chose to rebel against the God who blessed us, the God who made us, the God who designed us to thrive. Now, some of us may believe this is myth. Some of us may believe that this is true. I happen to believe that there was a literal Adam and Eve, that there were two people that were the first beings, the first human beings, and that they chose not to trust God. They chose to look elsewhere for what it meant to thrive. And when they did that, the Bible calls that decision sin. And sin creates a world where we don't always thrive. In fact, the New Testament of the Bible puts it this way. It says, since we've compiled this long and sorry record as sinners, both us and them, meaning both us and Adam and Eve, and proved that we are utterly incapable of living the glorious lives God wills for us. Here's what I believe. I believe that because of sin, we have default ways, or we have default desires that we think will lead to a thriving life, and they actually work against a life that is thriving. I have those ways. You have those ways. And thankfully, God does not leave us in this predicament. Jesus is God's answer to our sin problem. Jesus is God's answer to a life of thriving. And Jesus put it this way himself in John 10:10. He said, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. There is a spiritual enemy. The same enemy that tempted Adam and Eve not to trust God is the same enemy that tempts you and I not to trust God. And Jesus says he comes to steal, to kill, and to destroy, to take away a life of thriving. But Jesus said, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. So in this series, when we talk about a thriving life, when we talk about a life that is fulfilled, a life that is enriched, a life that is the life that we want to live, we're talking about life as God intended it in Genesis chapter 1. And yet, so few of us actually seem to find that life on a regular basis. I mean, we certainly get glimpses of it. Maybe it's a great vacation. Or maybe we have a good season at work, or maybe there's a fun family Christmas we have, but it feels temporary at best. We try, but it just doesn't last. And let's be clear, it's not because we're lacking in suggestions. I mean, there are always suggestions on how to thrive, right? There's always a new diet. There's always a new diet. There's a new job that may seem like that's the place where I'm going to thrive. We can find new hobbies and think this is the way I'm going to thrive. We can look for a better vacation. We can try a juice cleanse. We can try CrossFit. I love people who do CrossFit. I've never tried CrossFit. I really want to try it. But one of the things I know is, do you know how you can tell a person who does CrossFit? Do you know how you can tell? You don't have to worry about it. They'll tell you. They'll tell you, right? Have a little fun at my CrossFit friend's expense. But no, I mean, CrossFit, whatever it is, side businesses, new workout routines, all the clickbait that we click on, we're always looking for something to fill that gap. And we try, but we find it doesn't satisfy. And here's the reason why. Here's the big thing that's going to be unique about this series. God's ways to a thriving life are countercultural. What that means is it's not the thing that you think it would be. God has ways that enable us to thrive, and oftentimes they go against our default desires. They go against the thing that we're most attracted to, and yet they're the thing that's most beneficial for a life that's thriving. So you know what I hope? I pray this series is a treasure hunt for you. I pray that in this series, as we unlock these principles, it's like finding treasure in a field. Because really what this series is about is not just the words of Jesus. I mean, we can all kind of maybe wrap our minds around the teachings of Jesus and the value that they have for living a thriving life. But what we're really doing is going beneath even the meaning of the words of Jesus to the way of Jesus. See, Jesus had a way in which he lived. And he had a way in which he invited us to live. And so for the next 3 weeks, we're going to look at 8 principles that Jesus models and that the Bible supports lead to a thriving life. Principles that will not be in any particular order, but principles that work. And I'm going to tell you right now, some of these principles you're going to hear and you're going to be like, man, I'm doing that. And way to go. Keep doing that. And then there are going to be others that we listen to and say, man, that's a little bit challenging for me. So the way this is going to work is every week is going to be basically three kind of mini TED Talks, all by the same speaker, but just like three unrelated but connected through this through line of how to thrive kind of talks, about 10 to 12 minutes long apiece. And so this is the first one, just kind of laying out the series. I'm going to give you two more today. But here's what these principles require. These eight principles require faith. They require us to believe that the God who made you, the God who in Genesis blessed you and said, be fruitful and multiply, that same God, his ways are actually the best ways to thrive. And in fact, if this series is going to be most helpful to you, it will be because you don't just come and listen and get new information, but you actually shift priorities. You take action. You actually follow through in faith and try the things out that we're going to be talking about. I know that's a big ask, particularly if the countercultural principles run up against things that you might feel right now. But I'm telling you, in my experience, these principles, they work. And choosing to invest in them, man, it's totally, totally worth the effort. And we're going to do this as a team. So we've created a hashtag, #HowToThrive. And what we're going to be doing over the course of this series is sharing with each other what we're learning about these principles. We're going to be sharing insights. Man, we can share failures or we can share successes. We can learn from both. But as a team, collectively, wherever you are as a part of our Crossroads community, we want to grow together on #HowToThrive. I'm really excited about this series. I think it's going to be a good one. So are you ready? Are you ready to learn how to thrive? All right. Well, here we go.
And the Humphreys from Madison, Wisconsin, and we connected on Crossroads Connect.
We're John and Lindsay from Canton, Ohio. We just moved here from Cincinnati, Ohio. So thanks to Crossroads Connect, we now have community up here away from home.
Thousands of people attend Crossroads every weekend from nearly every state in the country. Hey, my name's Matt Welty. I'm the campus pastor of Crossroads Anywhere, and we believe that church is a team sport. We know that we get the most out of following God and learning more about Him when we do it with other people. So we've made that easier than ever. You can go to crossroads.net/connect and add yourself to the map. That means that people can find you. They can know that you want to be a part of the team, and you can look around the area that you live and find people to attend Crossroads with. You might choose to be a host or find a host. That simply means that you're going to have your home be a place where people can gather around the weekend together. It's a really exciting thing, and we'll make it as easy as possible. We'll send you a kit and walk along that way with you. So head to crossroads.net/connect and get started today.
Yeah, that is an amazing tool we have to be able to connect with one another. It's great having you today here at Crossroads Anywhere. We're doing everything. By the way, my name is Brian Tome. I'm the founding and senior pastor of this thing called Crossroads that you're a part of right here and right now. Why would we do something like that with Connect? Because no matter how good the teaching might be in one day or another day, no matter how good the music might be in one day or another day, we know for you to have a truly transcendent experience, you and I need to be with other people. So that's why we put a lot of money in that so you can find somebody else. God knew that Jesus had to come down, take on skin to be with us for us to understand it. And we need to be with skin, with other people to be able to grow spiritually and really get the most out of what Crossroads is. So please put yourself on that map, reach out, connect. Maybe you've been a part of us for now for 3 months. I don't know how long, but hey, go ahead and move. Try something different. You'll be really glad you did. A couple of things I want to talk about today. In talking about being with other people, small groups, group life are a big, big thing for us. And maybe you're with somebody right now doing Crossroads Anywhere and there's a specific group leader there that's sort of called you together. Maybe you have another group that you meet with on some other night of the week or some other place. This is why we have the summit. We have the summit that's happening in Cincinnati. If you live in Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, you need to get yourself there. Take a look at the details of the date of it. You need to get there because you're doing an amazing job of leadership and we need to do our best to build into you and give you the right tools and give you the right encouragement. That is going to be, it's a must for everybody who is leading people in a group setting. And if you're outside of that state area, you can also go to this information right here. You can get your pass and you can click in to be all on it and all in it. It's so good to have you. Another opportunity for you to grow is, I know a lot of us like, you know, I'm not sure about the whole church thing. I'm not sure about the group thing. But one thing I am sure about, I need to make me some jack. I need to make me some money. I need to have the right resources that's actually inside my account. This is why the Unpolished Conference exists for you. It exists for people who have started their own business, whether your business is a shower door company or it's a painting shop, it's a programming, it's a web-based application, it's an anything where you have to get up and get stuff done, and you need the right tools at the right time to know how to do your business. This has been a national movement. It's been meeting across the nation. It's been growing. And the national conference is coming up. Hundreds and hundreds of people will be there for 2 days. You have two-day options. You can choose just the inspirational part with the larger group or the smaller group breakouts where you can have specific skills. Man, a lot of people are benefiting from Unpolished who are in their own businesses across the nation, and I hope you will too. Well, we are now going to be generous. And let me just tell you how your church has already been generous. As you know, awful stuff has taken place down in Houston. The hurricane came in and kicked our nation's rear down in that part of our nation. Massive, massive devastation. And Crossroads, we've sent down a $50,000 check, which is a lot of money for us when we operate on a week and a half cash and it's unbudgeted. We've sent down $50,000 cash. We've also had some people go down to do some work there. And we're able to make those moves because we're generous here. When you give to Crossroads, you facilitate that kind of instantaneous response. Instead of you trying to figure out, oh, what's all the things that I want to do out here? I'll try to make the decision. This is my church. I tithe. I give 10% or whatever my predetermined percentage is to my church, and my church can be active and mobile. So we've already done that on your behalf, but we need all of us to continue to be faithful here. And so crossroads.net/give is for you. And let's continue with our day.
Groups of people are gathering in living rooms all across the country to experience this thing called Crossroads Anywhere. And because of the iMain campaign, Crossroads Anywhere has been growing rapidly. This summer, we flew to Seattle, Washington to meet with one of those growing communities. Once strangers, now family, this group welcomed in Kathy at one of the most difficult times in her life.
So I'm originally from Seattle. About 10 years ago, I decided to settle in Atlanta, Georgia. 2.5 years ago, my brother, who I dearly loved and he was kind of my hero, passed away unexpectedly. So I came back. I worked very hard to help my parents move from the three-story house they were in to a single-level home. But 2 weeks after we moved them into their new home, my mother had a stroke. And she had a stroke with me standing right in front of her. This past December, I was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. So I had difficulty just getting to church. I was broken. After all I had been through, it wasn't like I was mad with God about this diagnosis. It was like I would be rolling my eyes and saying, really? Are you kidding me? You know, one more thing. You know, cancer can be very isolating. Plus, I'm single. So I was feeling alone in my space. And then I felt like I had this very isolating disease. So, you know, I did the kind of the church hopping for a while and decided to do church at home. And my best friend Len, who I've known for the last 20 years, she helped me kind of think outside the box. There ended up being a Crossroads community here in Seattle, you know, folks meeting in a home. I hadn't really thought about worshiping in a home. I had always been a church goer, but one of the, you know, Katie Meyer, who was one of the Crossroads members here in Seattle, reached out to me via email. So we ended up meeting at one of the local restaurants, and it felt like I was being introduced to my family. Katie was warm and inviting. Scott and Janine, who are hosting the service, it just felt really good. I came and participated one time and I was hooked. I just felt like I had been familiar. They were familiar to me, even though we had never met. The more we hung out together, the more we enjoyed church together, the closer the relationship became. So, I show up typically a little early, say hello to everyone and come in the kitchen and have my coffee. And then we'll sit down and watch the service around 11 o'clock. And after service is over, we have an opportunity to just kind of share our thoughts about the service. And then prayer, which is really powerful because we each get an opportunity to either pray for someone else or ask for prayer. And now having this renewed essence of Christ kind of residing within me makes it a whole lot easier to get through those tough times, because I know it's not always going to be like this. It's awesome.
Because of your financial sacrifice to the I'm In campaign, thousands of people like Kathy around the country are able to live life in community and call Crossroads home.
A little Kendrick Lamar with your coffee. We thrive when we follow well. Now, that's not really sexy advice, is it? That's not necessarily what we like to hear. Learn to follow, not necessarily high on our list. In fact, if you do a search on Amazon for the word leadership, books on leadership, videos on leadership, guess how many resources pop up? Just take a guess. What do you think it would be? It's actually more than 200,000. There's a lot stuff written on leadership. Now, when you do the same search for following or followership, how many do you think you find? Actually, 245, to be exact. And those are basically books about how to lead when you're not the leader. And yet, in the face of that, in the face of what culture values, which is certainly being the leader, certainly being in front, having other people follow you, the Bible has very clear counsel on how to live a thriving life, and it is follow well. In fact, we're going to read a verse from the book of Hebrews. I love the book of Hebrews. This is a letter that was written to the early church, and man, I love it because it's all Jesus all the time. And at the end of the book, it says this in verse 13, in chapter 13, 17, obey your leaders. Let's just stop right there and admit we don't like the word obey. We feel a little bit uncomfortable about the word obey. We feel really uncomfortable about it if we're over 18, but let's be honest, we feel uncomfortable about it even if we're under 18. But yet the Bible says, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account. And this is talking about church leaders, spiritual leaders. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. Every year as a staff, we make a team commitment to each other. And actually, not just as a staff, there are a lot of volunteers on teams around Crossroads who are leading big ministry areas all over the country. And all of us make some commitments to each other around how we're going to operate as a team. We call it the I Promise document, because these are promises we make to each other around how we're going to function and operate in our relationships as a team, as a church. And one of those is, I promise to trust those in authority over me. In fact, I want to read a little bit of this to you. This is based on Hebrews 13, 17. We say, I promise to trust those in authority over me. Even when a decision is made that I don't understand, I will remember that I don't have all the information nor the responsibility and insight that God gives those in leadership. Now, I've got a lot of bosses at Crossroads, actually. I mean, you might think because I am a campus pastor that, I lead this campus, and yes, that's true, but I've got bosses. So Kathy Beecham, she leads all of the campus pastors, so she's my direct boss. We have an executive pastor and leadership team, and I'm under authority there as well. And then, of course, with Brian being the senior pastor, Brian is an authority, a spiritual authority, and an organizational authority to me. And so you guys know Brian. You interact with Brian, at least from a stage to screen or whatever, on a weekly basis. So I just want you to stop and think of what it would be like if Brian was your boss. Just, yeah. Actually, Brian is great to work for most of the time. But it's probably not surprising that sometimes we disagree. I had a situation happen recently that kind of brought this to mind, and it brought back the I promise, the commitment that I make around how I'm going to operate under his authority as my leader. And so there's a big ministry area that I was responsible for, and we were doing a huge volunteer recruitment event. And one of the things we had done is we had a caterer coming in, we're going to do some finger foods, give people kind of a chance to meet and connect, and then we're going to cast a vision and kind of invite people into this vision. So it's a really big deal. I've been working on this for months and months and months. Had this on his calendar for months and months and months, and mine as well. Well, he goes off on vacation, and so do I. And one of the things that happened while I was away on vacation is the date of our week of prayer and fasting changed. It was going to be 1 week in August, and it kind of moved up a week earlier, which meant it was the same week as this big event that I was doing, that I was leading. And we have a principle during the week of prayer and fasting that even if we have events here, we don't do food. And yet, I was thinking, man, this is a change that happened while I was gone, and I really think that for this event that I'm doing, it's the right thing to have some apps and kind of give people a chance to connect around that. I think that'll be helpful for the experience. And yet, I knew that Brian might have a different opinion. And so the thing that made this kind of even more challenging is I knew I wasn't going to get to talk to him about this until the morning of the event. So I was like, man, this is going to be challenging. And so I go in and I kind of make the case and tell him, hey, this thing was on the books for a long time. Week of prayer and fasting moved, and that's why we have this, and I think it should be an exception. I think we should go in this direction and still have kind of apps and give people an opportunity to engage. And so Brian's thinking about it, he's talking with me about it, and he's like, man, you can't do it. You can't do it. And let me tell you, I kind of anticipated that, obviously, that would be his response. And so I had a chance to kind of role play what would my responses be. And so I'm just going to give you an example. So one of the responses that I could have had was, what do you mean I can't do it? Right? What do you mean I can't do it? Listen, this is something that's out of my control. This is the right thing. I believe in this. Man, we need to do this and kind of push back. That's one of the responses I could have. There are any number of other responses I could have, but I had kind of predetermined in my mind that I'm going to fulfill my commitment with I promise. And even though I thought it was the right choice to still have food for this event, when he made that decision, I said, great, then we'll pull it. We'll pull it. And the reason is I believe what Hebrews 13:7 says at the very end of this verse. It says, let your leaders lead you with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. And so that was an opportunity for me to follow well. Not necessarily an easy opportunity to do that, but it's one that I knew would bear fruit. So how do we do this? How do we follow well? Well, there's a verse I go to regularly as a guidepost on this in my life. 1 Peter 5, 5-7, which says, likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him, because he cares for you. So how do we follow well? I think this verse says we follow well first with humility. You know, this verse says, clothe yourself with humility. When I think about clothing yourself, there's a choice involved, right? It doesn't say you either just are humble or you aren't humble. It says you choose to be humble. So when we engage in situations with people who are following us, where we need to come under their authority, we choose humility first. And then secondly, we do it through faith. You'll notice it says, humble yourself, not under the hand of your leader, but under the hand of God. I mean, let's just get to brass tacks, right? None of us has a problem following anyone until the person we're following makes a decision we disagree with. And when that happens, whether that happens in a marriage, whether that happens with your parents, as you're being led by your parents, at that point, as a follower of Jesus, we have to ask ourselves, do I trust God enough that his goodness and his care for me is enough that he will be with me as I follow this decision that maybe I don't agree with, that this leader has made? See, it really becomes a matter of faith. And I think that's why this verse talks about anxiety. I mean, I don't know about you, but it kind of seems like he's talking about being humble and leaders, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, and by the way, cast your anxieties on God. Well, I think those are totally connected, because here's what I've learned in my life. I am most anxious about the things where I have the least control. I am most anxious about following leaders that I don't think I can control. I am most anxious about submitting to authorities that I don't think I can control. And if I know that, then the more that I trust God as I follow those authorities, godly authorities, then I believe it reduces my anxiety. I don't know if you struggle with being anxious at work. I don't know if you struggle with being anxious maybe in other relationships where you're being led, but I would just submit to you that maybe one of the ways that anxiety actually can be an indicator of what God wants to do in your life is it's an invitation to follow. It's an invitation to trust God and trust the godly leadership that he's put in your life. So I'm gonna give you a couple practical to-dos on this one. Number one, do your job. One of the best ways we follow well is we simply do the job we're asked to do. So if you're being led at school, if you're being led at work, and someone's asked you to deliver on something, deliver on that thing. That's a way that we follow well. Number two, give up control. Give up control. Now, I want to give you a question, and I'm going to challenge you to ask people who are leading you this question this week. And the question is simply this. Does leading me make your life easier or harder? That could be a dangerous question to ask in some contexts, right? Does leading me make your life as a leader easier or harder? But I want you to be willing to ask that question and then to be quiet and listen to the response. Because what you hear on the other side of that will be of advantage to you. So when you submit and you obey and you follow well, it is to your advantage. And that's why we thrive when we follow well. And the Jay-Z song. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you guys there. I'm sorry. Yes, yes. We thrive when we celebrate. I'm sure we've all had this experience. Have you ever been at a restaurant where people from the restaurant, whenever there's a birthday, they come and they sing happy birthday? Anybody ever seen that? I don't know about you, but those always feel like more of an assault than a celebration. I mean, and the reason is there's no spirit. They do it like 80 times a day. So it's like, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. It just never feels like celebration to me. Maybe I'm the only one. But you know, there's something about celebration that we need to be reminded of. It might sound weird. Like, do we really need to talk about celebration? I think we do. You got to remember, we are the country that leaves the most vacation days on the table anywhere in the world. So I think there's something for us to learn about celebration. In fact, I'm going to give you a litmus test to see if this is an opportunity for you, if this is a place where maybe you can grow. Number one, I want you to think in your life right now about the last time you celebrated something. And birthdays don't count, and Christmas presents don't count. When's the last time you celebrated something? That's question number one. All right, got that? Got that date? Question number two. When's the last time something happened in your life worth celebrating? You got a promotion. You got a job. Parents, you survived the summer. You finished a project. You fixed the car. You took new steps toward growth. You know, my guess is there's probably a gap between the last time something happened in your life that was worth celebrating and you actually celebrating that thing. And maybe you can't even remember. You're really struggling to think of examples of when you celebrated. And I just want to say, you're not alone. You're not alone. I think this is hard for us. And why is it hard? Well, one of the reasons it's hard is because we're busy, right? There's always the next thing. I think sometimes it's hard because we're stressed out. We might be stressed out about the next thing, or we might be stressful because of what it took to get through the last thing. Maybe it's the challenge of being present. I mean, we've got so many devices that keep us from actually focusing on what's happening right now in my life. And, you know, for some of us, it's fear, right? It's fear of taking our foot off the gas. Maybe we're a type A person, and, And I just want to tell you, this one is hard for me. You know, sometimes when you're kind of assigned to preach on something, very quickly you realize, okay, God, this is for me. And so I just want to say, celebrating, and what I want to say about it, this is as much for me as anybody else. And maybe that's why God was so explicit that he is a God of celebration. You know, when God brought the nation of Israel out of Egypt, they had been slaves for 400 years. And so they didn't know how to be a people. They didn't know how to be a nation. They didn't know how to be anything other than what they had been, which was slaves. And so God gives them all of these laws, and he gives them these principles and these rhythms of life, instructions for how to live. And among them, among those laws, seven parties a year, like national throwdown parties a year. In fact, one of them is talked about this way in the book of Deuteronomy in the Old Testament. God says to his people, "Then you shall turn it into money, turn your harvest, turn your sacrifices into money, and bind up the money in your hand and go to the place that the Lord your God chooses and spend the money for whatever you desire, oxen or sheep or wine or strong drink, whatever your appetite craves. And you shall eat there before the Lord your God and rejoice, you and your household." Guys, this is the Old Testament God, right? And what is he saying here? Spend money on whatever you desire. Buy wine or strong drink, whatever your appetite craves, and eat it, celebrate it before the Lord. Why would he do this? I think it's because God understands something about our nature. And what he understands is our struggle to celebrate is connected to the brokenness in our lives. If you struggle to celebrate for any reason, it's likely because you think things depend on me more than they depend on God. And you might not say it that way. You might say it this way: man, I just got to keep hustling. I got to keep hustling because nobody else is going to make this happen but me. You might think about it this way. It might be like, man, I'm just so nervous about the future. I just want to make sure we are prepared and planned for the future. All of those reasons, though, they basically boil down to an increase in your fear and a lack of faith. And in fact, God tells us why we need seven parties a year, why we need to be reminded of this in the verses that precede what I just read. In verse 23, he says, "So that you may learn to revere the Lord your God always." Why celebrate? Why celebrate? I want to pour fuel on your fire of celebration by giving you four reasons to celebrate. Number one, it helps us remember God's goodness. When we celebrate, it's an opportunity to pause and say, something good happened. God did something in my life. I just experienced a win. I just experienced something positive. And it reminds us of God's goodness when we stop and we celebrate that. You know, one of the things that always, it just is a boost to my day, no matter when I do it, is just to do gratitudes. I love doing this. I'll just look over the last 24 hours, and I'll list from 1 to 10, and I'll say, what are 10 things I have to be thankful for in the last 24 hours? And I promise you, I am never without 10 things, even if it was the worst day I thought I ever had. I've always got things to be thankful for. Why? Because those things remind us of God's goodness. So whether it's a daily gratitude rhythm or whether it's a weekly celebration, getting with some friends and reflecting on wins of the week, whatever it is, these things remind us of God's goodness. Reason number two, it helps us rest and recalibrate our significance. You know, when you celebrate, it forces you to stop. I'll just give you a hint. It's not a celebration if you're doing it while you're still working, you know? But if we stop, it's an opportunity to rest. And obviously, God has a lot of things to say about rest. But it also recalibrates our significance in the world. Because when I celebrate, I often look around and say, man, you know what? This is awesome. This thing happened. And actually, it wouldn't have happened if I was just trying to do this on my own. Usually when I celebrate, I'm looking around and saying, this person helped make that happen. This wouldn't have happened if this decision wasn't made that was out of my control. Man, God, you are good. Number three, it helps us relate with people. You know, one of the best rhythms, to grow team connections, is celebration. Teams train together and they need to. Teams work together and they have to, right? But the teams that celebrate together, those teams love being together, and they actually, over time, outperform teams that don't celebrate. And then number four, it enhances our readiness for what's next. You know, celebration is a great way to pause and reflect, and if necessary, pivot to what's next. And so there are all kinds of reasons for us to celebrate, but I want to just ground us in the spiritual power of celebration by looking at yet another place where God's people, the nation of Israel, was encouraged to celebrate. This comes from Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 10, and it says, "Go your way, eat the fat, and drink sweet wine, and send portions to anyone who has nothing ready, for this day is holy to our Lord." And it says, "Do not be grieved, for the joy of the Lord is your strength." This is an opportunity when the people of God could have felt grieved, and instead their leader at the time, Nehemiah, says, No. You know how we strengthen ourselves in this moment? We celebrate. We remember God's goodness. We rest and we recalibrate our significance. We relate to each other, send portions to those who don't have any, and together we'll be ready for what's next. Now, I told you that this is hard for me, so as I wrap up, I just want to give you some examples on how this might play out for you. And I just want to say right up front, I do these things because while celebration is a challenge for me, Maria, my wife, is amazing at this. If you haven't met my wife, she's Puerto Rican, and I call her the Puerto Rican Martha Stewart. Like, my wife is just so good at celebrating moments and capturing the beauty of the moment and how she celebrates. This is really cool. So two rhythms that we have as a family that I'll just offer up as ways we've seen this play out for us. Number one is usually at dinner, and we try to eat dinner together every night, we do something called lows and highs. Now, you've probably heard of this, but you've probably called it highs and lows. As a family, we just said, no. We want to end on a high. So we start by talking about, hey, what was challenging in your day? But then every person goes around and also says, hey, and what was a high for today? We do that every day. Our kids are in that rhythm. And I tell you what, we never run out of things to celebrate. And often, not every day, but often we recognize, you know what? We really didn't have any significant lows today. And we can celebrate that too. Another thing that my wife instituted last year, though, we call the back-to-school feast. The back-to-school feast. And parents, believe it or not, we do this with our kids. I know some parents are like, yeah, I have a back-to-school feast. It's called Get Those Kids Back in School, and I'm going to celebrate that. Amen to that, by the way. But we do this one with our kids. And basically, she had this vision that we want to kick off the school year in a posture of gratitude. And so the way we do that is when school's starting, we just get together and we have a big feast, and we bring out china for this. We don't eat, we use paper plates in our house a lot. So, but we bring out the china for the back to school feast, and my wife makes place settings for each of the kids, and they all have kind of unique things about their school year. Maybe they get a coloring book, or they get something that's kind of age specific. It's just an opportunity for us to celebrate. We reflect on all of the blessings of the summer. What are the high points of the summer that we remember as a family? And the other thing we do is we pick a verse, my wife and I pick a verse that's going to be our focus verse for the year. Last year's verse was Ephesians 2:10, which says, "We are God's workmanship." And we just wanted our kids to understand you are uniquely designed by God, and let's see how that plays out this year. And this year, our verse is, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength." But this is just an opportunity for us to celebrate. Now, let me tell you, you know why back-to-school feast happens? It happens because my wife does two things. She puts it on the calendar, and she makes a budget to make it happen. And so that's my challenge to you as I close on how you can lean into celebration. What is something in your life that is worth celebrating? Again, not a birthday, not an anniversary, something else in your life that's worth celebrating. I hope you're celebrating birthdays and anniversaries, but something beyond that. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to make a date to celebrate that. And I want you to make a budget so that you can actually do that in a way commensurate to your budget that causes that to feel like a celebration. And we're going to share our ideas with each other at hashtag how to thrive, because we thrive when we celebrate. Hey guys, thanks for being with us. This is going to be a great series. Don't forget to share your ideas on how you're celebrating at hashtag how to thrive. We'll see you next week.
Hey, thanks for watching today. You know, if you found this helpful, we have a bunch of other stuff that you can watch and get engaged with. You could also share this if this has been helpful for you. Maybe it might be helpful with a friend of yours, and you can always subscribe to get the latest of the content we're producing. Thanks for being with us today.